January 15th, 2019 meeting of the Senate Higher Education Committee to order at 1:02. Yeah. Thank you. Members, thank you. We're going to have a few join us here. Would like to quickly just do some introductions of staff. We've got a couple pages, and I know if you guys could just jump on a mic and maybe introduce yourself and where you're from.
I'm Simon Opatz, and I'm from Golden Valley.
Hi, I'm Max Chu. I'm from Ames, Iowa, and I graduated from University of Minnesota 4 weeks ago, so go Gophers.
And let's see. Rachel, do you want to introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Rachel Bakke. I am Senator Anderson's committee legislative assistant, and this is my first year in that role.
Thank you. Well, today, go ahead, Senator Clausen.
I just wanted to make a comment about Max. Max was my intern last year, and his parents both teach at the University of Iowa State. I'm sorry, at Iowa State.
We won't talk about the cyclones, but yeah, that's all good. Well, thank you. I'm very honored to be chairing this committee. Look forward to it. We've got a great group of members, and I know I've been able to speak to everyone so far, but as we look at ways accessibility and affordability and relevancy to today's economy and the workforce of today and tomorrow, I just look forward to what's to come here this session. And we are kicking it off today with budget presentations and kind of a little up-to-date from Minnesota State and the University of Minnesota. We are kind of under some time constraints due to the fact that the House is going to be in session here. The House committee is going to be in session here at 2:30. So Minnesota State is going to present first. We're going to, members, just ask you to hold your questions until they're done with their presentation. We'll have some question and answer, and then they need to scoot over to the House for their presentation, then the university and the same thing. So if we could have the chancellor and the chairman come on up, and we'll get going. Chancellor and chairman, welcome back to the committee. Great to see your faces. If you could just state your names for the record and proceed when you're ready.
Thank you, Chair Anderson, and members. For the record, I am Michael Vekich, Chair of the Board of Trustees of Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. I'd also like to introduce the fellow trustees that are here today, Vice Chair Jay Coles, Trustee April Nishimura, Trustee Louise Sundin, and Trustee Cheryl Teffer. And at the table with me is Chancellor Devinder Malhotra. I will begin by thanking the members of this committee for your past support of Minnesota State. The important work our campuses do on behalf of the people of Minnesota simply would not be possible without your support. So thank you very much. I would like to say a few words about who we are, who we serve, and what our work means to the people of Minnesota. As you can see in our legislative request book, we educate 375 students each year across the state. Of those 375,000 students, more than 65,000 are students of color and American Indian. More than 80,000 are 25 years and older. More than 75,000 are low-income students, and more than 43,000 are first in their family to attend college. 10,000 are veterans and service members, and 118,000 employees in business and industry through our customized training and continuing education programs. Our campuses make an $8 billion economic impact in our communities, part through 37,000 alumni who will graduate each year. While these numbers are impressive, we are absolutely certain about one thing. We know Minnesota State simply must do more. We must do more at a time when Minnesota State and other systems of higher education across the country are facing powerful forces of change in terms of how our students learn, who our students are, and how our campuses respond to the new budget realities they face. We must do more because we find ourselves in a world that is also dramatically and rapidly changing. 8 out of 10 jobs that will exist in a decade or so from now haven't even been invented. And during their careers, our graduates will change jobs 15 times. In order to position our system to do more in this complex, in this context, my colleagues and I on the Board of Trustees have launched Reimagining Minnesota State, a strategic visionary process focused on how Minnesota State can become more nimble, responsive, and a dynamic enterprise. What we learned through this reimagining process will strengthen our ability to make good on 3 commitments we have made. Our commitment to the success of our students and the changing needs of learners, the very people who will be the workforce of tomorrow. Our commitment to diversity, equity, and inclusion. As we respond to a demographic shift and welcome an increasing number of students from populations traditionally underserved by higher education. And our commitment to the financial sustainability of our campuses. Some say that these are challenging times. I strongly disagree. I believe this is a time of opportunity for Minnesota State. Minnesotans have made strategic investments in our human capital and our bricks and mortar. We are focused clearly on the future. We know higher education a decade from now will look a lot different than it does today. With your help, we will be ready. The key to our success and will be the partnerships our colleges and universities have forged to meet the needs of our students and the communities they serve. This is something Chancellor Malhotra will expand upon. So, Chair Anderson, with your permission, I'll turn it over to Chancellor Malhotra.
Wonderful. Thank you, Chancellor Malhotra.
Chair Anderson, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Devinder Malhotra, and I have the privilege and honor to serve as Chancellor of Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. Thank you, Chair Vekic, and trustees who are here today, for your commitment, your passion, your advocacy for higher education in general and Minnesota State in particular. I would also like to introduce some of my colleagues, presidents of colleges and universities, who are here today in the audience with us. Kent Hansen from Anoka Ramsey Community and Technical College, Angelia Melander from Century College, Ginny Arthur from Metropolitan State University, Sharon Pierce from Minneapolis Community and Technical College, Richard Davenport, Minnesota State University, Mankato, Joyce Esther, Normandale Community College, Joe Milford, Pine Technical and Community College, Rasul Dasmos, St. Paul College, Annette Parker, South Central College, and Scott Olson, Winona State University. So as you realize, we don't leave home without them. Lots of them around us. That's our comfort. Several students, faculty, and staff are also here today in the audience, and I would like to thank them for their active partnership with us on this important endeavor. I want to echo what Chair Vekic said earlier. We are grateful for the support you all have given us in the past, and we look forward to working very closely with you as we figure out more effective ways to serve our students and our communities. As mentioned, we have an enrollment of 375,000 students in our 37 colleges and universities spread across 47 different communities in the state of Minnesota with 54 campuses which are actively serving these communities. Nearly 245,000 students are enrolled and are taking courses for credit, and nearly 129,000 students are full-year equivalent. We graduate close to 39,000 students a year. vast majority of whom stay and work in Minnesota. These graduates and our alumni add about $291 billion impact to Minnesota's economy. Over the past year, I have witnessed firsthand how important these graduates are to the communities you represent. In the past several months, we have traveled across the state to 22 different communities to listen what legislators, business leaders, community leaders, members of the K-12 sector, and nonprofits had to say about their partnerships with our colleges and universities. They shared with me what our campuses mean to them, what they need Minnesota State to provide, and they asked me repeatedly how they can help. I deeply appreciate that several of you and your staff members took time out of your busy schedule to join me at one or more of the listening sessions on these partnership tours. Excuse me. In Senator Newton's and Senator Abler's area, we heard about the critical link between Anoka Technical College and the manufacturing base of Anoka County. Along with Senator Clausen, Senator Dreheim, and some of your esteemed staff and several trustees, we saw firsthand the link between Dakota County Technical College and our K-12 partners. Senator Miller's district has for decades thrived on a partnership created through Winona State University's composite materials engineering programs with the area businesses. I want to be clear that we share your passion for career and technical education. Each year, close to 20,000 students graduate from our two-year career and technical programs. We have heard a simple message repeatedly in every community, in every part of Minnesota we serve. They need us. They need us to do more. That is because we are the partner of choice across the state of Minnesota. Communities need Minnesota State now more than ever, and we need your support to meet their expectations and aspirations. I firmly believe that the budget proposal outlined on page 3 of the legislative request book in front of you reflects the listening we did. It also reflects what we need to effectively serve all the communities across the state. Vice Chancellor King and Vice Chancellor Padilla and three of our presidents and one of our campus chief financial officers will go into greater detail about the budget request in a few moments. In the coming months, as you consider our request, please know we are well aware that our request would be a heavy lift for you. However, I like to think of it as a thoughtful request that accurately reflects all we heard again and again across the state and from our partners in your communities. The workforce challenge that business and industry face across the state is enormous. Our request represents what is needed so that we can effectively serve our students, fill the workforce gap, and continue to be the catalyst for economic and social vibrancy throughout Minnesota. As we reimagine Minnesota State and sustain our partnerships across Minnesota, it's evident our faculty, staff, and students deserve the strategic investments embedded in our budget request. I'll be here, members of the committee, to answer any questions you may have. Meanwhile, Chair Anderson, with your indulgence, I would like to request Vice Chancellor Padilla, Presidents Melander and Olson to take a deeper dive into our technology respect. Thank you again, Chair Anderson and members of the committee.
Vice Chancellor Padilla and others, if you want to head up. you're ready, go ahead and introduce yourself for the tape and start when you're ready. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Anderson, senators, staffers. My name is Ramon Padilla. I'm Vice Chancellor for IT for Minnesota State. And with me today are two members of our project's Governance Executive Committee, President Scott Olson from Winona State and President Angelia Melinda from Century College. Before we get into the specifics of our request, I think it's important to describe our current state. Our current state is that we run a system known as ISRS, or Integrated Statewide Record System. ISRS is comprised of financial, accounting, and human resource components, as well as a student information system that allows our colleges and universities to conduct business. It plays a critical role in the success of our students, from every applicant to graduate and nearly every process in between. It serves as the cornerstone data system for our enterprise and requires high security and high availability. It touches everyone and nearly every activity: application, registration, course scheduling, housing, financial aid, transcripts, system finance, accounting, and HR. It is a large system. Our colleges and universities cannot function without it. During school startup, we average 1 million logins a day into our identity management system. And during school startup, our database underlying ISRS logs 500 transactions per second during peak. And now, as you may know, it is 20 years old. It's homegrown, and it's reached the end of its technological life. We've been good stewards of the state by creating and maintaining ISRS for 20 years, but the system now prevents our campuses from being competitive and puts our system in technological risk. And I'd like to pass it over to President Olson.
Chair Anderson, I just want to remark on the incredible wisdom and talent on this committee, that it has expanded the influence of Winona on the committee, expanding not only from the committee administrator, but now the Senate president himself sitting with the committee. A very wise move on the part of the committee, in my perspective.
Thank you, President Olson.
Just a little editorial comment.
We're pretty proud of them, too, but you can go ahead and...
I just had a little more I wanted to say. That was the main thing.
See, now the wheels have come off.
Senator
Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before we are in agreement on the question of Senator Miller on our committee, could we do a roll call on that vote?
Okay, just a reminder of members, we're going to hold all questions and comments until after the presentation, but go ahead, President.
So, as you know, Minnesota State has been engaged in a process of reimagining. And this means reimagining what student success looks like and reimagining how we deliver service to students. And it's been a really exciting process. And just yesterday, we had a great conversation across the whole state within Minnesota State Colleges and Universities talking about technology-assisted advising. And technology-assisted advising has all kinds of advantages to students. And among them are that it will be quicker for them to graduate, and shorter time to graduation means lower cost to students, and probably better alignment of their goals with what they want to do. But in order for us to deliver on the full promise of technology-assisted advising, we need to replace ISRS. We need to replace it with this proposal that you have before you. That will allow a very different kind of advising to go on. So rather than, say, our faculty spending time talking about the technical aspects of whether you need PoliSci 101 or PoliSci 102, technology can answer those questions. And our faculty can answer richer questions about whether, if you're a finance major, does it make sense to have a marketing minor, or does it make more sense to have an econ minor, or how many more credits would it be to double major in econ and finance? Those kind of richer questions aren't really allowed in our current structure, and the proposal we have before you is one to enrich and enhance our technology so it'll allow, among many other things, for that kind of
engaged advising that'll make a difference in the life of students. We think it'll lower the cost of earning a college degree. We think it'll shorten the time to getting a college degree. We think it'll better align what students are doing with the work that Minnesota asks of them. So we're pretty excited about it. And we are grateful for the $4 million that you have already invested annually in this project. And we're here before you today to ask for a $17.5 million annual request to further enable our ability to expand and serve students. So at the end of the day, this idea is about student success. And with that, I'll turn it back to Vice Chancellor Padilla.
Thank you. I would ask if you have your packets in front of you to turn to page 5. It has a blue pyramid on it. We've divided our project into 4 phases. Phase 1 we are currently in, it's called our readiness and procurement phase, and it's nearly complete. We have taken the money that you invested in us, and we've done a great deal of work during this phase to ensure that we are successful. We are at a point where we will be moving to the next phases here in June of 2019. The first 2 transitions after that will be finance and HR to pave the way for the student record system. We hope to go live with finance and HR in fiscal 2022 and 23, just 2 years from now. We need a complete finance plan before we can issue our RFPs. The timeline has RFPs ready for release late spring, so June 2019 is a critical target for us. President Melinda?
Chair Anderson, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Angelia Millender, and I'm president of Century College. Committee members, may I ask you to turn to slide 6 in your packet. This slide illustrates our phase 1 deliverables. As you read this slide, I want to emphasize all the well-developed, purposeful, and planned steps and all the efforts taken to achieve these outcomes. Please note, all of these deliverables are essential components of a successful implementation, along with everything else shared with my colleagues. Prior to joining Minnesota State College and University System, I worked for 2 large higher education systems where there was a need to modernize their enterprise systems with current technologies and redesign business processes. I was very engaged in the same planning and implementation steps. I must share that based on those experiences and my work here, the Minn State system is delivering exceptional work. From the visioning stage to defining our scope and putting our students at the center of this work, from ensuring clarity and transparency at all levels of the process to governance and business process mapping of current and future states, and including multiple stakeholders and content experts, all while managing the change that is so very critical to ensure employees know the why and adapt accordingly to implement this project as intended and within the expected timelines. Ramon?
Thank you. I would just like to close by saying we need to be strong and clear in the urgency of this work in our shared commitment to successful execution. Thank you.
Ms. Chancellor King, welcome back to the committee. If you could.
Much. Senator Anderson and members, good afternoon. I'm delighted to be here. My name is Laura King, and I'm the Vice Chancellor and Chief Financial Officer for Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. I'm joined by 2 of my favorite colleagues, Kari Christensen, who's the Vice President of Administrative Services at Central Lakes College, and Kent Hansen, who's the President at Anoka Ramsey and Anoka Tech. Right, my absolute favorite college. And we will have an opportunity to hear from them in a few minutes. But if I could, Mr. Chair, if I'd like to take just a few minutes to bring our heads sort of into the financial world that our colleges and universities have been living in, and then I'll step out again into the operating budget request itself. So I'm on slide 7, which has the red line and the blue line, and it gives us, I think, a really easy snapshot of the history of what's happened to higher education in Minnesota in these last 10 years. As the chair and the chancellor mentioned, we are in a very competitive environment in Minnesota and nationally for citizens, for people to join our communities, and for them to be good and faithful members of the labor market. For decades, Minnesota has invested in that competitive environment through its investment in public higher education. And you can see in this chart on the left side there, we started out this decade with resources that were above the national average. But as you can also see, while there was great investment in the generation before us, that investment in the generation ahead of us has not kept up. And the red line now has fallen down below the national average. In 1997, Minnesota's per FYE funding for public higher education was 11% above the national average. Between 1995 and 2015, the Minnesota decline was more than 30%, was twice the national decline, a decline of 31% versus 13%. And as of 2017, we're now back to 11% behind the national average. What that says to us is that other parts of the country are investing in public higher education in a way that helps their marketplace and puts us at a disadvantage. Committee members are aware of recent increases in funding for our colleges and universities, and we are certainly grateful for that support. As the chart on slide 8 shows, though, inflation has not been our friend. The blue bar, which represents nominal state funding levels, has moved with the state's economy. As the state's budget sagged, so too did its ability to support public higher education. The long-term downward trend in inflation-adjusted levels is shown in the pale blue line, and what that shows you is that as against inflation, we have lost share in funding over the last 15 years, and that translates into a decline in our resources on a per FYE basis. Our colleges and universities are highly dependent on your support. I like to say we're a very simple operation. 90% of our general fund is state appropriation or tuition revenue. And so the graph that you see on slide 9 is one that we follow very carefully. This is a measure of the relationship between state appropriation and tuition. And it's the source of the narrative you might hear in the halls about the statute's aspirational statement that higher education would be funded one-third by the student and two-thirds by the state. This chart is what informs that discussion. If our request is fully funded, we would be able to move this relationship about 5 points in the next 2 years. You can see there's been quite a bit of swinging around on this chart over the last 15 years as state funding and tuition have jumped up and down. Our request asks the state for new resources sufficient to replace the revenue we would otherwise expect from a 3% undergraduate tuition increase, which equals about $22 million a year. Our request also assumes that our compensation costs increase at 3% annually. If both a zero tuition increase and compensation funding, if both those events don't occur, then our colleges and universities face budget reductions of 4 to 7% a year over the next several years. So that's about a $150 million swing for us overall. President Hansen and Vice President Christensen and all of our presidents and campuses have been living the reality of the information you see on slide 10. We have seen state appropriation increase and tuition reliance decrease. It's key to recognize that the two revenue sources work together to provide our colleges and universities with 92% of their revenue. With state funds in recent years substituting for tuition revenue, our total revenue hasn't increased in the way folks might think, because $1 of state appropriation is about 50 cents in new revenue if we hold tuition flat. We have averaged about a 1% a year revenue increase over the past 10 years, and that's without adjusting for inflation. If we adjust that number for inflation, our revenue has increased on average about 0.1% per year, year over year, these past 10 years. So we have reduced programs and services every year in order to balance budgets. The challenge on campus has been made harder these last two biennia due to the structure of the appropriated funds. In 2019, we reported a remaining structural gap at the start of 2020 of $26 million. Our ongoing state appropriation decreased in fiscal 19 by $10 million because of the way the appropriation was built. That's a challenge our campuses are struggling with. Over the past 5 years, our revenue has increased while at a rate that lagged the increase in our cost structure, resulting in reallocations every year. Our colleges and universities reallocate on average about $35 million a year, which you can see on slide 11. They really have had a hard hand. They reallocate both to balance budgets and to direct resources from lower to higher priorities. In just the past 4 years, we have reallocated nearly $150 million, including $92 million in absolute budget reductions. These cuts have eliminated jobs, closed programs, and slowed technology and equipment replacement cycles. In the past 5 years, the number of system employees has declined 10%, a reduction of nearly 1,800 people. We entered the fiscal 2019 planning cycle with a $36 million estimated structural gap, and so we know our colleges and universities continue to face budget pressure. Our budget request is tied directly to our workforce and partnership insights, our commitment to affordability, and to preserving the financial health of our colleges and universities. You have heard about NextGen and its mission-critical investment in our future ability to serve students and our communities. Our request asks for your help to hold undergraduate tuition flat and invest in the critical needs of our colleges and universities across the state. It's designed to focus on key workforce and economic development demands and improve student persistence and completion. We were very focused on improving student persistence and success and have executed multiple strategies across our campuses. With your help several years ago, we launched a workforce grant program targeting certain educational paths. We'd like to expand on that idea this year with two grant programs that are tied directly to our commitment to serve low-income students and to increase the rate of baccalaureate attainment across the state. The college program is designed as a last-dollar grant program, and we estimate at least 97% of its benefit would flow to households with income below $70,000. The university transfer program builds on our success with transfer pathways and creates an incentive for college students to move quickly on to upper division study at the baccalaureate level. If fully funded, these programs are expected to benefit over 10,000 students. I'm going to skip a little bit about the grant program, Mr. Chair. I'm nervous about the clock. We're also excited about the workforce expansion program outlined on slide 14, which focuses on the critical role Minnesota State plays in the state's economic future. This program focuses on key demand gaps, expands racial, ethnic, and economic diversity in critical fields, and builds pipeline capacity with the K-12 community. If fully funded, this request would enable us to enable our campuses to serve communities across the state with the programs that are needed to meet the talent demands of our communities. It would help us to undertake a once-in-a-generation technology replacement program It would target high-impact support to help our students advance and succeed, and it would target and incent students' progress to completion. I would like to ask President Hansen and Vice President Christensen to close for us today with some remarks about their campus life. Dr. Hansen became president of Anoka Ramsey Community College with campuses in Cambridge and Coon Rapids, as well as the president of Anoka Technical College in 2013. This year marks his 27th year in higher education. Ms. Christensen has served as VP and CFO at Central Lakes College since 1996. She joined the college in their business office in 1992, and this marks her 29th year in higher education. So if I might turn to them, Mr. Chair, I'll sit back.
Chair Anderson and committee members, for the record, I'm Kari Christensen, Vice President of Administrative Services at Central Lakes College. Good afternoon, and thank you for this opportunity to talk with you about the Minnesota State budget request. At Central Lakes College, we are located in the center of seven poverty-ridden counties. We serve over 540 first-generation students annually. 70% of our students receive some form of grant or scholarship aid. 46% of our students report food insecurities. And several students per semester are living in their car or from couch to couch. And more than 25% of Crow Wing County residents have been diagnosed with a mental illness, and depression and anxiety are more common than diabetes. When it comes to pursuing higher education, our students have incredibly high barriers to overcome. They need student supports and affordable tuition. Annually, CLC averages $20,000 in random acts of kindness grants to help students pay their heat bills, fix their car, etc. Another aspect of affordability is our ability to provide strong academic advising, career pathways, and transfer guidance for students. 2 years ago, Central Lakes College made $2.2 million in budget reductions. We reduced 17 positions, reducing services to students, closing multiple academic programs, and reducing operating and equipment budgets. CLC was not able to offer two new industry certifications because we could not afford the cost of new equipment. In our labs, old worn equipment continues to break down, and we can't afford the new technology being used in the workforce. Connections with students are what it takes to help students stay in college. Students have the academic potential to succeed and find gainful employment. What they lack are supports and resources to continue when things become difficult. Our goal is for every student to have at least one connection to someone who works at CLC. There is strong evidence to support that these connections improve student success. CLC continues to focus on our mission of education, and we are partnering to bridge the gap of services that we are no longer able to provide. With the core values of this operating request, serving our current and future students and protecting our commitment to affordability, we ask for your support of this operating budget request. Thank you.
Chair Anderson, committee members, my name is Kent Hansen, president of Anoka Ramsey Community College and Anoka Technical College. I'd like to start out and let everybody here know that I'm very proud to work with a couple of folks in this room, Senator Abler and Newton, in service to the state of Minnesota and the Northwest Metro. So thank you guys. So I kind of look at my job as I'm a professional juggler. I know we've talked about the budget situation. So for me, one of my main goals is supporting the workforce at Anoka Tech. And how I do that is really difficult at times because our college has to stay current and be responsive to industry. And we need the equipment to support the latest technology so that we can train our students the best. This really came to light to me 4 years ago when at a shared governance meeting our faculty were talking in the machine trades about how they had to go and make their own parts to fix the equipment because they couldn't find that equipment anymore. So it's really a challenge for us to stay current in support of the workforce needs. And the juggling part is working with the school district, business and industry, but also supporting our students. And we have to play that balance all the time between do we have more support staff, college lab assistants, or do we try and get that latest piece of technology? And just as an example of how I work to try and meet industry needs, currently we're trying to develop a robotic welding program, and we need lab space for that. And it's going to cost us about $750,000 to renovate space. And for me, trying to juggle and figure out how to do that, we've already got $250,000 in donations from business and industry, but those gaps are very common for us when we're trying to figure out how to serve our communities better. So I'm also juggling, how do we deal with the students that come to us today? At Anoka Ramsey, 20% of our students have been diagnosed with a mental illness in the last 12 months, 45% over the course of their lifetime. 20% of our students suffer from food insecurity, and 11% have been victims of domestic violence over the last 12 months. So the students that we have really require a lot more attention and support. And currently right now, again, talking about juggling priorities, we have about a 620-to-1 advisor to student ratio, and how do I get more support people to help these students, and about a 2,000-to-1 counselor to student ratio. So those are some of the realities that I juggle in my role as president. I love my job. I love trying to work with our community folks and these great senators here, but it is a challenge. And thank God we do have very strong support from business and industry. But for me, it's always a constant struggle because I want our college to be the best that it can be and be state of the art, and we need to be training for state of the art workforce. So thank you very much.
President Hansen, maybe if we could have Chancellor Holtra and Chair Vekic come back up. Members, will open that up to any questions for our friends from MnState. Senator Abler.
Well, thanks, and my president's just always nervous what I'm going to say when he comes here. But I don't know most of the rest of the presidents, but I can just tell you, if they're anything like him, their communities are just really enhanced by the work they do. Ours has been a member of the community, actively engaged in many groups, and I'm sure many others have as well. And so I just wanted to commend welcome Chancellor Malhotra, and I'm excited to have you back. But I appreciate the freedom that they have to engage and be a true part of the communities, and it really does help. And it's good you're all jugglers, because it's going to be quite a budget year. So anyway, good luck to all of us.
Senator Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, Mr. Chair, congratulations to you. I'm very happy to be on your committee, and more happy for you to be chairing this committee. So congratulations. I do have a question for the Chancellor or Vice Chancellor King. On page 17 of the packet, it talks about 2019 enrollment. How do the numbers on there, for example, 2019 number looks like 126,000 system-wide. Are those full-time students? And ultimately what my question is how does that compare to the 375,000 plus students that's listed in the other brochure?
Certainly, Senator Miller. Yes, on page 17, what you're seeing is, in our vernacular, full-year equivalent measures. So this is the total number we have at 30 credits a year. So full-year equivalents at fiscal 19, we have 120, it looks like about 127,000. Full-year equivalents. Those aren't individual people. Those are the sums of 30 credits. On a headcount basis, we serve 375,000 students, of which about 245,000 are credit-taking. So this would tell us that, on average, our students are about half-time. If it takes 244,000 people to make 125,000 full-year equivalents, we know that, particularly at the college level, the credit-taking patterns are in the 9 to 12 credits per term, which is almost full-time but not quite. And at the university level, the credit-taking behaviors are higher, but they're not on average 30 credits per year. So that's the difference.
So, Mr. Chair and Vice Chancellor, so the 375,000 plus is an accurate head count. The numbers listed in the brochure are based on basically full-time students. Exactly. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Senator Miller, that's exactly right. Full-time credit-taking behavior.
Questions? Senator Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I suspect that my comments to you will be similar to what my comments will be to the University of Minnesota when they make their presentation as well. This is a wonderful committee to serve on, though I'm going to reserve judgment what with the new chair. But having said that, I think, excuse me, I didn't know you were listening. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. But I think one of the great frustrations of this committee is that if you look at the funding that we did for you for higher education in 1997 when we were above average to the U.S. and that we've dropped substantially lower over the last 20 years. And we've seen similar data for the University of Minnesota in terms of how it's funded by the state in regards to Big Ten schools. And it is really disappointing because if you look at the map of what you folks are providing, it's impressive. I mean, there's an opportunity for every Minnesotan out there. I struggle and say, well, if we don't, in the midst of not having enough dollars, what can we do to help you get the greatest use out of your dollars? And I think we certainly want to hear from you, perhaps on another day. Are there policy things that we do that get in your way of being efficient with your dollars? And I think the other question I have is the PSEO programs. I know that, because I served on school board for 10 years, and I know that school districts are hesitant to really promote and push that because that takes dollars away from them as well. And yet I also know that a lot of times there's a lot of kids around 16, 17 that perhaps a new set of circumstances, they're ready to move on. So I would love to see more and more of our students in that 10th through 12th grade in our school system around the state look at creatively accessing your facilities, because I think that might help them step into a pathway that they might really be falling in love with. And I think they would do it without necessarily the risk of going out and spending so much money, spending a year or two in college, and at the age of 20 looking in the rearview mirror and all they really have is a lot of student debt and they haven't gotten any closer. So, you know, those are some thoughts I have. The PSEO program, I think, was Governor Perpich, and I think it's been a wonderful program for our state. I would love to see all of our colleges push that. Even if there was a way you could do it in such a way that maybe you create special programs, different pathways, so that kids might do that. Because I really think that sometimes, especially with social media, I think our kids in high school are getting stale sometimes by the time they're hitting their junior and senior year. So if there were a way that you could do that, if there were a special initiative that you were asking money for, I know this person right here would certainly look friendly upon that. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Senator Anderson, Senator Jensen, to your questions, first to the question of PSEO. PSEO and concurrent enrollment, they both have a heightened focus within our system because what it does is it provides us to expose young men and women while they're in high school to experience at a college or at a university. And similarly, in the concurrent enrollment, we are working with our K-12 partners where one of our faculty members will partner with one of the faculty at the K-12 system to offer a college-level class while students are at the high school. And so both of those programs are on the rise. Many of our institutions spend a lot of, fraction of their enrollments, closer to almost 8 to 10% often may come from PSEO and concurrent enrollment put together. That is more important in some areas than in others, but all of our colleges and universities are focused on it, and there's a heightened focus on it. And to your question about what beyond money, I mean, obviously strategic investments are important, but then so is flexibility in space as we strategically position ourselves. And so it is our intent to work with you as a committee, but also with other committees and other members of the Senate and the legislature at the House level to particularly shore up some of the economic fragility
and some of the other areas which we are seeing increasingly, as President Henshin mentioned, about mental health issues among our student body, which are on the rise, and some of the other areas. So those are some of the areas where we can work effectively with you, particularly addressing food insecurity, addressing homelessness. President Pierce is in the audience here today. At Minneapolis College, one out of 10 students during the course of their academic career may experience homelessness. And so those are some of the areas where, again, we can work with them, because the success of the student depends as much on their focus and motivation and hard work in the classroom as much as the support they get outside.
Mayor Klassen, you've got the last question before our friends have to run through the tunnel and make it to the House.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe 2, maybe 3 years now, this committee listened to a report that was done that questioned the sustainability of the Minnesota state system. You might recall that. And there were some recommendations. I'm just wondering, this is a kind of an hour-long question or debate we could have, but within the budget, is there anything that addresses that report about the sustainability of the system? And maybe a few comments. We see an increase. Where have you maybe made some changes to address that sustainability and reduce the budget?
Yeah, Senator Klassen, I'll defer to Vice Chancellor King to answer that question.
Mr. Chair, Senator Klassen, we would welcome a chance to review what we've done since then. There was a series of strategies recommended in that report, and we have clicked our way through those strategies. They worked both on the revenue side and on the expense side. Things like customized training, continuing ed, online enrollment expansion, using educational online educational resources as a tool for students. We've seen a very large expansion in that area. So we have a whole portfolio of strategies that have been executed. What can't be fixed is just the fundamental relationship we have in our environment between your support and tuition reliance and our cost structure. That's not going anywhere. We are a labor operation, and labor operations have wage inflation, and we're reliant upon state support and tuition support to deal with that. We've seen substantial declines in our headcount in the last 5 years, as I mentioned in my testimony. Our colleges and universities are very good at the variability in their enrollment and managing their cost structure within that variability. But at the end of the day, we're still a very simple operation with some very simple forces.
Senator Isaacson, briefly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and once again, also congratulations. You know, I've heard some discussion of the contraction possibilities or looking at how we can work on the budget, and I would say that there's far more still to investigate outward in terms of our role in the regional balances and the nuances of our economies across the state and the role you guys play that need to be explored long before we're looking at anything that would say inwardly it's time for us to look at closing shops, and I would be very hesitant to hear any movement that goes anywhere near that anytime soon. Thank you.
Chancellor Malhotra, you want to respond?
I agree with Senator Isaacson with your comments, and that's our intent to do exactly what you suggested.
Chancellor, Mr. Chair, thank you so much for your presentation. I know you have to head off to the House, so thank you very much. We look forward to working with you here this remainder of the session.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Anderson. Yep. Thank you, members of the committee.
As we transition, I think we're going to lose about half our room as they head down to the House. Thank goodness for tunnels. If we could have President Kaler. Thank you, sir. Just give a brief moment for transition. Now the gophers come in, right? This.
Reinforcements.
Would can just have a transition. We do have kind of time constraints because now the university is going to have to present and get over to the House, too. So, we can have anybody in conversation just step out in the hall, and President Kaler, proceed whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm happy to see you all again. For the record, my name is Eric Kaler, and I'm the president of the University of Minnesota. And I want to begin by saying thank you for the strong support this committee and the legislature has provided to the university during my presidency. I'd also like to recognize members of our Board of Regents attending today, Chair David McMillan, Vice Chair Ken Powell, and Regents Darren Rocha, Michael Hsu, and Abdul Omari. And I think that's all of them. This day marks my final legislative session as the leader of the five-campus University of Minnesota system, and it's been my great honor and privilege to partner with you and your colleagues over the past nearly 8 years. What I have seen happen during that time has been nothing short of remarkable, as our partnership has returned great dividends for the people of the state of Minnesota. Together, we have invested in critical research initiatives that address Minnesota's most pressing challenges. We have worked to keep tuition low for Minnesota students and their families. And among many other accomplishments, we have made key investments in the university's physical infrastructure. Our partnership with you truly fuels Minnesota's future. We believe the state of Minnesota is best positioned for success when it invests in the University of Minnesota, the state's land-grant and public research university. Our institution is powering Minnesota's economy today and building the economy of the future. We prepare students to fill today's needed job openings in healthcare, engineering, computer science, and agriculture, among many, many other areas. We develop and shape the research and innovations that will create Minnesota's workforce and discoveries and businesses and cures of the future. And through our outreach efforts, we work with and learn from Minnesota's communities so we can put those discoveries and services to work for taxpayers across the state. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that is why an investment in the University of Minnesota is an investment in our state's future. As you will hear in just a minute from Senior Vice President Burnett, our 2020-2021 biennial budget request reflects our highest priority needs. We believe it is reasonable, strategic, and forward-looking. We feel we must maintain and then improve our current levels of excellence in teaching, research, and outreach, which are critical to the success of our state and our citizens. And we must continue to invest in our core operations, maintaining high-quality faculty and staff, addressing the most critical facility and technology needs, and supporting statewide initiatives. But without your partnership, we cannot maintain the quality and excellence Minnesota taxpayers expect from their great public research university. I remind you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, that we have a track record of working together as responsible stewards of finite state resources. We have accomplished great things together, and I'm confident that that will continue. As I reflect on my time as university president, I am grateful to have worked with each of you on this committee. For some, like Senator Cohen, Senator Clausen, Senator Miller, Senator Abler, Senator Newton, and Representative and now Senator Isaacson, we have worked together for many years. And I've appreciated the opportunity more recently to get to know Chair Anderson. I'll add my congratulations to you, Senator Draham, and Senator Jensen. As I prepare to step down from the presidency in 5 months, I feel confident in trusting the care of the university's partnership with the state of Minnesota to you and my successor. I thank each of you for your support and your counsel. At this time, I'll ask Senior Vice President Burnett, with your permission, Chair Anderson, to provide more detail about our legislative request.
Kaler. Senior Vice President Burnett, welcome to the committee. If you'd state your name and proceed when you're ready.
Thank you, Senator Anderson, members of the committee. I'm Brian Burnett. I'm the Senior Vice President for Finance and Operations for the University of Minnesota. I'm here briefly to share the university's request for our biennial request in our O&M appropriation. We are asking for an increase of $87 million, $30 million in FY20, and an additional $27 million in FY21. This request is about 4.5% in the first year and 4% in the second year of the biennium, and would help us mitigate tuition increases for Minnesota residents to fund the university. It builds on the priorities of the university and reflects a strategy that has the mission and the vision of the university as its foundation, tied to our long-term strategic plans for our campuses. And it offers an opportunity for the state to share in the success of our institution. It acknowledges the true costs the university faces just to remain in place and maintain the quality and preserve the unique experience we offer our students. And we believe it's fiscally responsible and sensitive to the competing priorities for state funding and is simple and straightforward. The foundation of this goal, to address the most pressing needs, different from recent years, we are not asking for a list of unique programmatic or service initiatives that might add to our current portfolio. Instead, we are asking for one item, an increase in our base that will allow us to address priorities across our basic foundational mission activities. Costs across these mission activities continue to grow. Inflation, as measured by CPI, is running at about 2 to 2.5%, and as measured by the Higher Education Price Index, which is more sensitive around wages, it's about 3.7%. Within that inflationary context, we can best explain our needs across the five major areas of spending. First and foremost, the need to provide competitive compensation to our talented faculty and staff. I would submit to you that the most valuable resource at the University of Minnesota is our people. It's the reason students come. It's the care, the health care we give to Minnesotans. And I would submit to you they're our top priority because they are our most valuable resource. In the last few years, we've implemented general increases at the rate of inflation, or slightly less, around 2%, in each of the last 7 years, and we had 2 years of salary freezes because of fiscal constraint. But we find ourselves playing catch-up now to many of our competitors for our faculty. Examples are the medical school recently lost 5 faculty members to the University of Miami, where they received large salary increases, plus a $20 million startup package, and took with them $12 million of NIH-funded grants that will now be done in Florida instead of Minnesota. The College of Liberal Arts, we typically each year on the Twin Cities campus face losing 8 to 10 of our star faculty that are offered other pay raises of 20 to 25% by our competitors. The College of Science and Engineering recently lost 4 faculty in electrical and computer engineering when they were offered salary changes of 25 to 40% above what we were paying them. And in the College of Veterinary Medicine, we've recently lost faculty to places like Michigan State, Colorado State, and Tufts, all for pay increases 10 or 20% above what we're paying. So our top priority, or about 60% of the biennial requests, would go towards moving up our pay scales to be competitive. And it's a merit-based, with the exception of those that are under bargaining agreements with the university, pursuant to law. Our increases for faculty and staff are based on merit. They're not just across the board. The competition isn't only confined to faculty. We also face competition for health and life safety professionals in the Twin Cities as the labor market tightens. And again, we're looking at a salary pool of around 2.5 to 2.75%. We don't think that's over the top, but with inflation pushing 2.5%, we feel like we've got to have a salary pool around 2.5 to 2.75%. Beyond compensation, the remainder of our requests address 4 other areas, and I'll just cover those quickly. Facility and technology costs. We continue to have debt service and things that we have to do to provide the spaces that provide the education for our students. Technology and system maintenance costs continue to rise at levels above inflation, and we do all we can to try and mitigate those costs, but it's a challenge to try and provide the rich atmosphere of online journals and those types of things when the prices keep going up for our libraries across the system. Third, some of our units face significant financial challenges that have occurred over time, and we try to work through those with them over time to get those corrected. And again, we continue to have continued demand for compliance activities, making sure we're processing our federal grants correctly, make sure we're living up to the rules of the NCAA for our athletic programs across our system. In student services, we continue to have demand for mental health professionals. Minnesota State just talked about the increasing demand for mental health services in their system. We feel it very much the same in our system. More and more students are coming through our door with mental health challenges and expecting the university to have staff to respond to those issues. Public safety, obviously keeping our campuses safe is a key to students and our faculty wanting to come and do the work that they do each day. And instructional costs do change as we grow, particularly like on our Rochester campus that continues to grow, our youngest campus, the university, those come with additional costs. So again, our request to you is to maintain the quality of this university that has been built over a century plus in decades of investment by the state legislature. So again, about 40% of the university's $3.8 billion budget comes from the state's O&M appropriation and our tuition combined. These are the most fungible funds in budgeting because they're flexible and we're able to move them to the highest and most critical priorities and core needs of the institution. They're not bound by restrictions like federal grants or most of our donor gifts and that type of thing. So, again, just to summarize, we're asking for $87 million over the biennium to add to our O&M appropriation to let us address some of the highest needs within the institution. And with that, I'd like to turn it back to President Kaler, and I think we have a few other testifiers. Thank you for your time, Mr. Chairman.
Kaler, thank you.
Thank you, Vice President Burnett. Chair Anderson, with your permission, I would like to introduce to you Olivia Osea-Tutu, a student at the University of Minnesota, Duluth. Olivia.
Welcome.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I am Olivia Osea-Tutu, and thank you for the opportunity to speak today. Today, you heard numbers and facts on why the University of Minnesota school system is an important institution to support. I am here to tell you about my personal experience as a student at the University of Minnesota Duluth and how it's impacted me. In my family, which actually they're right back there, they're here to support me, education has always come first. My father immigrated to the United States from Ghana to attend school. If he was willing to do that just to get a good education, my brother and I had to attend a good school. Originally, my dad was going to attend Brown, and he did for a little bit, but he chose to transfer to the University of Minnesota Twin Cities because he knew that he would get a good education at an affordable cost. I knew that I wanted to attend a University of Minnesota school, but the Twin Cities was a little bit too big for me, so I chose to attend the University of Minnesota Duluth because I knew I would still receive an amazing education with professors who care about what they're teaching. By attending the University of Minnesota Duluth, I believe I have had opportunities I wouldn't be able to get at any other school. I have been involved with the Student Association as the Director of Legislative Relations, which is a unique position that we have to organize our lobby days at the Capitol. So I'll be seeing you guys in a couple of weeks. I have my own committee, and I'm learning how to organize people, and I also have been learning how to be an effective leader while doing something that I love. I've had so many amazing opportunities and experiences at UMD that I couldn't dream of attending any other school and getting the same thing. There are so many meaningful learning opportunities in and out of the classroom that have set us up to excel in our careers. I believe that already I have had experiences that set me apart from my peers. I plan on staying in Minnesota after I graduate and to work as a political community organizer or at a nonprofit organization. I want to work to improve my own community with the skills that I have gained and built upon at UMD. I ask that you continue to support the University of Minnesota's budget request to ensure that other students like me can receive an amazing education here in Minnesota. I also ask that you support the University of Minnesota capital investment request, which provides critical funding to maintain our facilities through HEPR and targeted projects like the Child Development in the Cities and A.B. Anderson Hall in Duluth. Thank you for everything that you do to support me and the University of Minnesota.
Seeing you here in the next couple months, too. President Kaler.
Chair Anderson, with your permission, I would like to introduce you to Megan Weber, an extension educator at the university working on the control of invasive species.
Welcome, Ms. Weber. State your name and proceed when you're ready.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. It's a pleasure to be here. As President Kaler said, my name is Megan Weber, and I'm proud to serve as an extension educator focusing on aquatic invasive species issues at the University of Minnesota. There are thousands of us working at the University of Minnesota every day on topics as diverse as natural resources, agriculture, health sciences, engineering, and countless others. We work to solve problems faced by Minnesotans and beyond, to create new innovations, to teach the next generation of students, and to bring new skills, tools, and resources to everyday Minnesotans across the state. This is the value we as staff and faculty provide to your constituents, and we work hard to put the resources the state invests in us to good use. My work focuses on protecting Minnesota's life at the lake and our precious water resources. As you all know, much of our identity as Minnesotans is associated with water. With over 13 million surface acres of water in our state, it's a lot to manage and protect. With the Aquatic Invasive Species Detectors Program at the University of Minnesota, we are working to harness the power of an engaged public to add capacity to aquatic invasive species prevention, research, and management. The AIS Detectors Program officially launched in 2017 through a partnership between the Minnesota Aquatic Invasive Species Research Center and University of Minnesota Extension. 216 people have now completed our training, including your colleague, Senator Carrie Rood, who was part of our pilot training in 2016. These Minnesotans are now bringing that knowledge back to their communities, where they have contributed over 7,000 hours of volunteer service toward solutions to aquatic invasive species problems in the state. That adds up to nearly $200,000 of in-kind service to the state of Minnesota in just our first 2 years. AIS detectors are everyday Minnesotans with a shared passion for protecting aquatic resources from the problems associated with aquatic invasive species. The strength of the programs draws on the diverse background of our volunteers with the flexibility they have to contribute service in the ways that best match their skills and interests. It is programs like this that you help to support when allocating resources to the university as part of their budget request. One of my favorite examples of the impact of this program and the work of the volunteers stems from an event we host each year in partnership with the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources and local partners across the state that we call Starry Trek. Starry Trek uses volunteers for targeted searches of Minnesota lakes for a relatively new invader in the state called starry stonewort. It's an invasive algae that can grow tall, dense stands that can interfere with lake recreation and can potentially displace native species. A new population of starry stonewort has been discovered by our volunteers each year we've held this event. The discovery at Grand Lake in Stearns County, though, is the most notable. The size of the infestation when Starry Trek volunteers discovered it was only about the size of a tabletop. After just a brief morning training, volunteers were able to identify something suspicious from mere fragments of the species recovered during their search. After positive identification from DNR, the Lake Association and DNR were able to respond using hand-pulling techniques, which to date have been successful in preventing the spread of the species from outside of the boat launch area where it was initially discovered. This is a positive and hopeful example of how people can make a difference on an issue that can often feel quite overwhelming. Helping to protect our lakes is one of the many responsibilities we share as Minnesotans. My colleagues and I are proud to play a leading role at the university in tackling the significant challenge. The state support you provide is a critical piece of what allows us to continue this work, along with many other incredible programs at the university. We are your partners and collaborators. The next round of AIS Detectors workshops begins this spring. We're looking forward to meeting our next cohort of volunteers and learning about the incredible things that they will accomplish in 2019. So again, Mr. Chair, thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you, Ms. Weber. President Keeler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With your permission, I will introduce our final testifier, Doug Hipscht, who is a community leader in Otter Tail County and chair this year of the University of Minnesota Alumni Association.
Welcome, Mr. Hipscht.
Hello, my name is Doug Hipscht, for the record. Thank you, Chair Anderson and members of the Senate Higher Ed Committee. It is a pleasure to be here with fellow representatives from the University of Minnesota. I'm also a proud graduate of the University of Minnesota with a degree in Applied Economics. My two daughters and son all graduated from the U with degrees in Finance, Biology, and Supply Chain Management. Currently, I serve as Chair of the University of Minnesota Alumni Association Board of Directors. The University of Minnesota has 485,000 Twin Cities alumni and 585,000 alumni system-wide. A while back, I testified about the importance of the University of Minnesota to our farm. The U's impact extends to just about every farmer in every county, in every corner of the state, driving Minnesota's global economy and our statewide workforce. Because of its role as the state's only comprehensive research institution, and because of the statewide influence of extension, the university is a major reason why I can compete and succeed as a farmer and business owner. The University of Minnesota helped farmers like us, among other things, on building design and engineering, veterinary diagnostics, on nutrition, on animal husbandry, and on science. And it extends to many workers in greater Minnesota engaged in the food processing business. And Perm is one of these towns. And that's why I'm here today supporting the university's biennial budget request. It's often been said that the University of Minnesota is the state's economic engine. To make this point, I'm going to talk about my hometown of Perm. Perm is located in northwestern Minnesota in Otter Tail County and was recently acknowledged by the Smithsonian Institution as one of the top 30 small towns in America. We have more lakes than any other county in the United States, and Perm is the center of 1,000 lakes. The U is vital in preserving and protecting these lakes from contamination and AIS. As I make my six-minute commute to work, it's evident that the University of Minnesota is everywhere. The boulevards and parks are full of flowers, and thanks to a robust Master Gardener program and a world-class beekeeping center. The fields of potatoes, barleys, kidney beans, and corn all have direct ties to sea fans using varieties and precision farming techniques that are developed by the U. The University Irrigator Program is managing the irrigators, preserving water, and ensuring the groundwater is not contaminated. Groups of 4-H'ers are excitedly getting ready to go to the state fair. We contract with the University of Minnesota to provide all of our 4-H extension agents, including for 106 at-risk kids from the Boys and Girls Club. I drive by Bongard's cheese plant that has many direct connections to the U in food processing and science. Next, I drive by an expanding Tuffy's dog food and Kenny's Candy, where the owner and president is a University of Minnesota graduate, athlete, and supporter. They export pet foods and candy all over the world. I then go by past Arvik Communications. Again, the president and CEO is a graduate of the university, as is his daughter and the probable future CEO. Arvik is a diverse telecommunications company. They have about 1,200 employees and are bringing high-speed internet to our rural areas. I then head past a $40 million waste-to-energy plant that was engineered and permitted by University of Minnesota graduates and owned by Five County Consortium that provides steam energy to our local processing plants using garbage as the fuel. I drive by a multitude of workforce housing, both single-family and multifamily, constructed by Grove Perm. And yes, incidentally, the president is a graduate of the University of Minnesota. I then go by Perm Health, hospital and clinic that employ a bunch of doctors, surgeons, and health professionals educated by the U of M. All five dentists are products of the U, and we currently have 4 students in the School of Dentistry. The veterinary clinics are all owned and operated by the U of M graduates. There are literally dozens of retail stores, NGOs, and professional businesses owned and run by U of M graduates. So you might ask, why am I talking about Perm at the Senate Higher Education Committee? It's pretty simple. Suffice it to say, Perm is a microcosm of the larger U of M community, and without the U, we are done. Chair, members of the committee, I heard President Kaler use the word indispensable when describing all the university does for the state. In my experience as a farmer, business owner, and county commissioner, I cannot think of a more appropriate word. The university has been an indispensable factor in my life and my family's, and of course the lives of so many of your constituents. I believe the University of Minnesota's request will prepare a skilled workforce, strengthen to drive Minnesota's economy, and increase outreach to all Minnesota communities. I urge you to support the University of Minnesota's biennial request, and I thank you for this opportunity.
Mr. Hipsch, love Kenny's Candies. President Kaler, any thoughts before we open it up for questions?
Mr. Chair, no, sir. That concludes our presentation, and I would be delighted to stand for questions.
Great. Thank you. Senator Isaacson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and President Kaler, thank you for your service to the university and to the state. I really have appreciated working with you over the past several years, and it's been a wonderful learning experience. I can't help but comment that after watching the last two requests and looking at the historic nature of our declining ability or willingness to fund education at a level that it needs to be, if it doesn't still make me beat that drum about what our priorities are in the state and have to make some decisions about what we're going to make sure we have around in the next 50 years. And if you, you know, you look at all the reasonable reports, I say this all the time, of how Minnesota ranks as a state, and then you hear the story we just heard about Perm, which I spent much of my childhood running around there as a teenager in inappropriate ways, I will tell you that it's a wonderful place, and it's a great example of what the school brings to our state and the investment. And what I tell people is, time and time again, it's one of the few things the government spends money on that when it's done, everybody's a little better off. And I just hope, Mr. Chair, as we look at the new administration and in the House and what we're doing over here, that we can find a way to kind of flip the script on where we've been headed and the way we fund things and encourage us to look at some long-term solutions and asking some tough questions about where we're spending our money, because I think this is one of the best investments we can make, and I appreciate your time in presenting today. Thank you.
Senator Abler.
Well, thanks, and it's nice we can blend law enforcement with higher ed. It's in those comments there, Senator. Anyway, I just wanted to, I don't know how many more times we'll be seeing you at this chair, and I can't imagine you'll be going on hikes and canoeing, but maybe you will, and you'll, but I just wanted to thank you, President Kaler, for your leadership. It's been a very interesting 8 years. You didn't know what you were getting into, at least all the way, and there's always surprises, and but I think your leadership has been able, and I think you can proudly look back when you finish. You have to keep working another few months, but that the U is better off than when you found it. And I think there's a, for all the challenges that we are still going to face economically, and I think the strong leadership and the amazing depth of the boosters, and I see a number of region candidates here, and the strength of that cadre, which is very difficult for me to have to pick somebody. But I just wanted to thank you personally, and that you've done well, and in a very hard situation. I just wanted to thank you for that.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. President Kaler, kudos to you and congratulations, and thank you for your service as well. You know, there's a lot of numbers that fly through these files that we have, but I just want to just make sure I understand. So your biennial budget request for 2021 is $87 million, is that right?
The Chair Anderson, Senator Jensen, our requested increase for the biennium is $87 million, $30 million for the first year, $30 million again for the second year, plus 27 for a total of 87 in biennial math.
Do you remember what you requested in the biennium, the 2018-19?
It was, Senator, Chair Anderson, Senator Jensen, I rather than give you a guess, which I think is right, I will phone a friend if you'll let me. 121? $121 million.
So your request went from 121 down to 87?
That's right.
If I could ask the rest of the committee members just to help me understand, I was trying to understand what Minnesota State was requesting, and it looked to me like, looking through my old notes, that in previous biennium, they had requested $178 million. Does that sound right? And then had received $106 or so? And then their request went from $178 to $246. Is that right? Okay. And then this one, we went from $121 to $87. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Well, I just want to echo some of the thanks and just offer my congratulations. You've got 6 months. I know you're going to bust through the tape. We had a good conversation a couple of weeks ago, and just want to thank you for your service and the legacy you're going to leave here in Minnesota.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I appreciate the kind words very much. Thank you for your partnership with us.
Thank you. Members, Senator Claussen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and just like to join with others in saying thank you for your service to the University of Minnesota and also the state of Minnesota, so thank you. Just a quick question. I know you have the maroon and gold metric goals. I'm not sure they're here. I haven't had a chance to see them, but at some point, could we get those sent over to the committee?
Chair Anderson, Senator Claussen, absolutely. We'll get those to you. We're particularly proud of almost every single one of them, so we're happy to share.
Thank you.
Thank you, President Kaler. So, members, that wraps up the business for today.
We are back on Thursday, January 17th at 1 p.m. We're going to have new commissioner Dennis Olson from the Office of Higher Education. He's going to give an overview and also a real thorough overview of the state grant program. So seeing no other comments or questions, we're adjourned.